Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Today is Wednesday, September 23rd. Jeff Erickson here with Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Fantasy Sports. Scott and I go as far back as I do with anybody in the industry. Scott wrote for us for the longest time. We play in multiple leagues together. When we see each other, we golf together, play poker together, all sorts of good stuff. You hear him regularly on Sirius XM Fantasy with us. I've gone on his show. He does tons of podcasts. Scott, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Thank you for that lovely intro. I'm doing great, man. Doing great. It's nice weather in Michigan. I got some golf in this morning.
Nice.
All sports are in season. You know, NBA, what is the semifinals and NHL finals, baseball course, pennant races. You know, who are going to be the final 16, Jeff? Just spine tingling. And football, look, hey, it's been a pretty smooth liftoff. I wasn't sure. I really haven't been sure what to expect all year from sports and with the environment that we're in. I don't need to say much more about that, but it's been entertaining. I wonder if the offense is a little bit out of hand, but you know they're not really calling holding penalties. It's so hard to define what the hitting area is, but whatever. The games have been fun. Other than the injuries, it's just great to have football back, and I'm getting more and more optimistic. I was so nervous that the baseball season would get the plug pulled in the middle of it or maybe even the beginning of it, and it seems like they're going to get through that season. I mean, it's just about done now.
Yeah.
And I'm getting encouraged that they can get this football season played to its entirety. And at that point, you know, if they can do that, this season goes down as a big win.
Yeah, just don't take college as our example and we'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's depressing. You know, you live in Big Ten country. I'm a Big Ten fan. I live in Pac-12 country. So I'm not feeling it on a regular basis. But, you know, I do, you know, I'm a fan of the game. I found myself, though, like Saturdays, because the Big Ten's not playing. I don't find myself like, oh, who's playing today? Kind of like, well, live my life today, which is good. I need to, you need to kind of reboot every once in a while. You know, just be a fan and not just, and just maybe do a few other things. Be outside a little bit here and there when you can, while you still can, before the weather turns.
Yeah, I mean, look, especially with people like you and I, because you know we're big golf fans, we're soccer fans.
Yep.
So it's not just the four majors. So there's always something going on. And with me, I like college football. I don't love it, and I think the reason why is I went to Providence. They don't have a football program, so it was never. I didn't. Once you go to a college where football is significant. I mean, even with you going to Northwestern, where I know they probably won like five games when you were there, but you know, it's still a Big Ten school. I know you had that great run when they went to the Rose Bowl in the 90s. Occasionally, you know, they'll pop up into relevance. Mm-hmm. And the basketball team's had some great moments too. I mean, they've made tournament appearances. But I think your college experience, I think so much of what happens to you when you're in the college age, the music you like, the movies you were into, I think a lot of that, although we certainly evolve as adults and you never want to stop learning, and I'm and nothing like I was when I was 20 years old, and in a lot of ways that's much for the better. But I feel like a lot of our formative artistic and just things that make us come for those years. And because I didn't grow up, you know, New England's not a big college area. You know, Doug Flutie, BC, they were kind of a big deal when I was growing up, but it's not New England. For all the colleges in New England, it's not a football hotbed. So I like college football. I don't live for it. My dad lives in the Auburn University area. He's relocated there in his retirement, and he's become a big Auburn fan, so I always root for Auburn. Plus, you know, anything that gets you to root against Nick Saban is generally a good idea. But you know, college football is – I like it. I talk about the NFL not having any defense. I mean, in college, I mean, it's not unusual to see teams score like 47 points and lose. I think it's just so hard to play defense in college. But I like college football. I don't live and die with it. There isn't a single team. There were a couple years in Michigan, you know, when they had that Chad Henne group that was together for 4 years, and Mike Hart and Mario Manningham, Braylon Edwards. I was kind of into those teams. But there isn't a college football team that can lose and make me sad. So I guess that means I'm a casual college fan.
For sure. And, you know, I am pretty zealous. I can't even talk today. I have a strong rooting interest for Northwestern. And
sure, of course.
Yes, I do feel sad when they lose. And for the record, we won at least 7 games my 4 years combined. We went 0 for my freshman year, though. It was sad. I think we won.
Oh, wow. Winless freshman year. That's how bad getting Erickson on campus was. The team was so dispirited that they could win. Let me ask you this. If you could give a championship, if you would have like one glorious championship season for any of the teams you care about, the Reds, the Bengals, Northwestern football, basketball, who would you most like to see win?
Northwestern kids, football still.
Okay,
football. I mean, the Rose Bowl year was incredible. We got to number 3 in the country at one point. That, you think about that. We're happy to be ranked. We're happy to have a home game on ABC. You know, like a national broadcast against Penn State. I was at that game. That whole year was just glorious. The win at
95, 96. What year was that?
That was the 95 regular season, 96 Rose Bowl. I went to the game in the Big House where we beat Michigan, despite Tim Biakabatuka's best efforts. And that, later that year, he was in, you know, total beast mode against Ohio State, and I'll forever thank him for that. Because that put us into the Rose Bowl. It was, you know, because we had the one weird non-conference loss. We beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame and then blow a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter to Miami of Ohio, like a botched punt. You know, it was really odd. And we had a great punter, too, that year, Paul Burton. You know, Burton family was like, they have had like four guys that basically did great things at Northwestern. And yes, and Suarez just hit a homer. I'm very happy about the Reds right now. And moving on, sorry about that. I probably should leave the TV off when I'm doing these podcasts, but I can't help myself right now. But yeah, that league was, I mean, that year was just amazing. The homecoming, we shut out Wisconsin 35-0 in the kind of a drizzly rain. We beat Michigan, beat Penn State that year. Everything was great. You know, Keith Jackson comes to our campus. Are you kidding? Get out of here. That's like a dream. And, you know, we had this guy, Gary Barnett, walks into a
Jerry Barnett
game.
Right.
You know, when he gets introduced to the Northwestern fan base, right? And, you know, we're going to take the purple to Pasadena, he says at halftime of a basketball game. You're like, who's this guy? You know, and then, like, my senior year, we beat BC. I don't know if you remember Pete Mitchell, the tight end.
Of course.
That was also a good in Top team. Gun. That was our best win. That or beating Jeff George 1 year. Those were my two best wins out of like 10 that I had to choose from at Northwestern. So
Pete Mitchell, Jacksonville Jaguar for a while. He had some fantasy relevance too. I also, by the way, you mentioned Biakabatuka. I always wanted to believe he was going to be a great fantasy player. And other than like one game, I think he went nuts in one game against Washington where he had a couple of long touchdown runs, but he really didn't have much of a pro career.
Yeah. And some of these guys, you get one bad break, one injury, you're not the same player anymore. And,
sure.
You know, it could have, shoulda, woulda. You know, break in with the wrong team. sometimes that just damages you, whether it's development or whether they play as you get hurt on, and you might not have got hurt on another team if you had a better line in front of you or something like that, whether it's a running back or a quarterback. And there's the sliding doors theory, you know? It's just...
Absolutely. What if Nick Foles never gets hurt? Do we have any idea that Gardner Minshew... I've been saying all along, 2 weeks, if he was a first or second round pick, people would be over the moon for this guy. I know that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one pick, and he's expected to be a star. And I'm not sure still what Minshew's upside is, but I think he's going to play in the league for a long time. I think he's legitimate.
Yeah.
And the only reason why... I don't think there's more buzz. I may know people like him because he's a kind of a cool guy. He's got the mustache and all that. He's a easy story to root for. But I think he's actually, you know, hashtag good.
I agree. I think he's one of those solid career starters. Maybe he's never considered a top five quarterback in this game. But I think he's a solid guy, a solid quarterback in this league and deserves to start. Maybe, this may not seem like praise in our circles, but like a Philip Rivers type of career. That would be a darn good career. I don't think it's a Hall of Fame career. I think he's overrated by some. But on the same token, you know, he could run into a great season. He could have a Joe Flacco career. How about that?
Andy Dalton career, maybe on the high end without the championships, the Eli Manning career, who, you know, if you take out those two championship runs, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer at all. But he certainly was a win for the Giants, and you know, I'm looking forward to watching Minshew on Thursday night. Usually, the Jacksonville gets those when you get a Jacksonville Tennessee game on Thursday. You usually run from it. Remember that you get those London games and everything. But the Jaguars are actually fun, so I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. And I did the rewatch of that, and like they went from clearly tanking for Trevor to, oh wow, this is a fun team. Give me more. I'm looking forward to the rewatch every week of this team now. And I have to do that rewatch. You know, when you have 10 games going on at once, there's no way you can keep track of things all at the same time. Unless you go to unless you have like six or seven TVs to try to keep track of it. And even that
doesn't work because you're just going to be too scattered, too much. It's just sensory overload.
Yeah.
And I've tried different techniques. I've said no checking the fantasy scores, no running the Twitter every 10 minutes or 10 seconds, I should say 10 minutes, that'd be an improvement. But, and I still suck at it. I'm still at 145 thinking, wait a minute, do I have a DFS lineup that's crushing? Wait a minute. Is one of my fantasy teams, is it all putting it together? And on better weeks, I'm good about it. And I'll just let the stuff settle and try to watch it, try to appreciate it, try to see as much as I can in a controlled environment, but it's hard. Plus I'm at home, which is good. You know, the dog may need to go out. Somebody may be at the front door. You know, it's just every week I feel like, man, I was just too swiveled today, too scattered today. And then that's where the rewind, the package where you can rewatch games. I wish I had the time and the patience to rewatch every game. I know some people do that. And then my colleague at Yahoo, Frank Schwab, I want to give him a shout out. Not only does he rewatch during the season, but he does this great thing that after the season ends, he rewatches every game.
Wow.
Just to get a sense of what just happened and to get him primed for the off season, which I think is just a tremendous dedication to his craft. And it's, you know, man, it's just think of how far we've come. And when we first got into this fantasy game, you know, it's like, oh, I know a bar that has the Sunday ticket. Isn't that great? You know, but you might see what might comprise what you saw of a game. Might see the five plays they showed on ESPN or something. That's all you'd have. And now you can literally, if you want to watch every Antonio Gibson touch, you can. If you want to watch every Joe Burrow pass in 5 minutes, you can. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's right. And it is remarkable. And yeah, I sometimes don't get through the whole slate, but what I try to do is first watch the ones I saw the least of. So for instance, I have two TVs. I've got the bigger of the two gets the grid channel, the eight games at once.
Bucks.
And then I put like the other one, I'll put Red Zone on usually. Sometimes that one with the volume, unless there's like a drive I really want to watch, which case I can just toggle over, make sure I follow that. And yet you have a day like Sunday, you know, where you had 10 games in the early slot, you had the U.S. Open, you had a big baseball day, and I know you play just as much baseball as I do. I'm not giving up on my teams there. Even you had the NBA conference finals in one league. You know, it was crazy how much you had going. You had soccer in the morning, although soccer is becoming super U.S. fan unfriendly right now in terms of its television coverage. That's, I'm very angry about that. Kind of spitting that silently.
Yeah, Joe Sheehan's been all over that too. And you really have to love soccer to follow European soccer on the West Coast because this is the start time. Now, on one hand, it's nice that it's out of the way. It's not competing. It's not up against American sports. So I guess that's nice. But if you really want to follow your team, your club, you have to get up at some ungodly hours. But yeah, it's a little frustrating the way that TV thing is broken down. Here's the thing. A lot of people complain. It's like a weekly complaint now with the split of the games.
Yeah, and I've
stopped making that complaint only because I understand what the NFL wants to do, what these networks want to do. They want signature games in the second window. And so those become like almost de facto standalone games, you know, where there's a couple of – usually it's just like a headline game. They want everybody to watch Drew Brees and Tom Brady for God knows what reason. Turns out, you know, that was really hard to watch in week one. But that's what they want. All I wish is that even with that, could we just go 9-4? You know, or when you had – you know, I agree with you. I have the two TVs. One of my TVs is the Octo Box, and the other one is the Red Zone. And last week, the games that weren't on the 8 Box were – one of the games was Atlanta-Dallas, which I wanted to watch. In the first week, there were, I think, 9 early games, and the one game that didn't make the box was Cleveland at Baltimore. Yeah, I'd like to watch Lamar Jackson. Maybe what they're doing now is they're thinking, okay, if we have a game that's a draw, we won't throw it on that box because they think we'll chase the game somewhere else. I live for the day. I can't wait for the day. And Mark Stope has made this point. Some other people have made it. We have customized. I want – look, the Sunday ticket I think is a good value, but it's not inexpensive. I would love to program. I want to watch what I want to watch. Let me – tell me how much money you want. I'll give it to you and give me the technology to pick the games I want. It's an on-demand world. I want to say, okay, this is how many games I want on that screen, and these are the games I want in this configuration. I hope that that's coming someday soon.
Yeah. And you almost feel like it is, but then so much is trending towards cord cutting, so much is trending towards that. I fear that, you know, where soccer is leading, other sports will follow and, you know, push things towards that. And, yeah. Could I figure it out and probably figure out how to get Peacock onto my TV, and still do that? I could, but I don't want to. I don't want to have to go through that effort. I've already plunked down. I've been a loyal customer. Stop diluting my value here. That's all I ask. But anyways, too much.
You know, one more thing I want to say on this. It has been too much talk, but that's what you get with me. The day I got my two 48-inch screens in my office, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, I was so happy, and I thought, this is like the greatest setup. And now, if I had to do it over again, I would have gone a little bit bigger on the TVs, and I would have had at least a third one in here. Now, two doesn't – I think everybody has two now. I feel like two isn't enough.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't have a man cave. I live in California. We can't afford extra rooms. You know, it's my bedroom and my office, but that's okay. Workspace. But whatever you want to call it. It is something though that, you know, here we go.
And by the way, if you want to, I know some people share this sometimes. If you get a great setup at home, send me a tweet, send me a picture of what your setup is. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and some people do, and I'm envious. Like Jenstad's got his own little like converted garage with three TVs and all that.
Right.
Perfect. Yeah. That would have solved my problem. Probably.
What a great dude. Shout out Scott Jenstad. One of my favorite people in this industry. If I ever get kind of in a bad mood or something, I go to Jenstad and he talks me down. Awesome guy.
Exactly right. Every Sunday night it's therapy for he and I. For he and I both. We kind of talk through whatever it's frustrating us at the time. Usually,
really, really good player too. Not just a good guy. I mean, he's a very good analyst and very humble about it, but he's an excellent fantasy player.
That's right.
Except in fantasy golf. I don't know why he's been so bad in fantasy golf, so I can't be too nice to Scott.
He knows golf. That's the
He's also a really good golfer too, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's a good golfer, and he's like – I know he's done well, like some of his like Masters wagers he's winning, I think, our one and done pool. He's just having a bad run in our season long the last 2 years.
To be fair, he's only been in the league a couple of years, so it's a small sample. I mean, for all we know, he could go Tiger Woods on us the next 8 years. We'll see.
Of course, you're like the most steady Eddie in that league ever. You always are contending. And you may not win every year, but you're always in there. Me, I'm all over the place. I won a couple years ago.
A few times. You won at least 3 years, I think, right?
I've won four, but I think I'm finished. I might be last this year. It's really sad. Yeah, it's and I thought I had a good team, too. That's the really thing that's really frustrating, but so it goes.
Let me ask you a question. As we pivot to football, let me ask you a question I've been talking about with some other people. Tons of injuries, right?
Yeah.
How do we draft a healthy team? Is that even possible? Like, was there a way to steer away from this, or you just get a hope that you don't step in the ditches?
I think the latter. Are you going to have send spies out to monitor everybody's off-season work habits when they can't go to camp? And even if you could, can you even keep on track of that? I think you can go with history sometimes, but how could you have predicted a high ankle sprain from Christian McCaffrey? You couldn't. How could you predict what happened to Barkley? Unless you just are fading running backs as a whole, and you took a safe Michael Thomas. Oh, wait, never mind. That analogy doesn't apply.
Kenny Galladay, right? Young player, you know, ascending talent. He hasn't gotten on the field yet.
No talk about this in training camp until the last week, too. That was the thing that drove me nuts. It's like, all of a sudden, oh, hey, he's not practicing, or he's limited. You know, even if you drafted that last week, okay, he's limited. Maybe he won't play week one, I guess, or maybe he won't have a full load week one, but no, he hasn't played yet. It's really aggravating. And, you know, we know that the Lions are very close to the vest with their information. I get that. That is part of the problem. But nonetheless, I mean, honestly, I don't want to, like, say, okay, we're absolved. It might require a little bit of digging in, but how many wide receivers have had hamstring injuries this year? It's at least six or seven prominent ones.
I didn't catch yet the Stefania Bell segment on your radio show Wednesday. Did she have any overview about what's going on in football right now with the injuries? I'm just curious what the takeaway was on that.
She did, actually. It was the first thing we talked about is that this would be the equivalent of like the second or third week of the preseason when a lot of soft tissue injuries crop up. And sure enough, they're cropping up here, too. And the thing is, you can't go from half speed to full speed readily. It's difficult to do that, and it's very difficult to simulate it in practice and camp, and it's even harder to do so before you report to training camp. You can, you know, there's workouts, and then there's workouts in pads. There's workouts going full speed against an opponent, getting hit, you know, pushing off certain ways. I think it's just a very difficult thing to do, and I still supported the idea of no preseason, and especially the way teams treat the preseason, but you also can't put your head in the sand and say there's no effect. I think there's definitely a correlation, right?
I would think so. One thing I've tried to do more and more in the last few seasons is just skew younger with my players and guys like, now look, they're all going to be right. But I mean, I didn't have any T.Y. Hilton. I didn't want any part of A.J. Green. I also avoided Julian Edelman, who just had the best receiving game of his regular season career, at least yardage wise, although I still think it's a great time to sell him. He's not a big touchdown guy, and a lot of times he ends up missing time. But I've tried to skew younger. That is not a panacea. In the NFL, anybody's career can end on the next snap of the football. And you know I don't draft into injuries, and I tend to fade any kind of injury optimism. So
same.
That helps a little bit, but I'm like anybody else. I have some teams that, you know, I have some Barkley that hurts. If I had any league, I had the number one pick, I was taking McCaffrey. So I don't know how you get away from that. It's just, you know, we're all going to be bit by it to some degree. But I do think it helps to try to go with the younger players with cleaner resumes for whatever that means. I mean, and again, even then you need certainly to get lucky.
Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned the AJ Green, when the cheese goes bad, it stays bad theory. And you know, it got me to think of the cheese stands alone from The Wire. So that made me happy. Even though the green note, it made me unhappy as a Bengals fan, but I don't think you're wrong about that. And I think that's been there's many things that you have as some of your hallmarks. One is avoiding injuries. It's definitely something that's you've pounded on before, and I think as a percentage play, it's the right play. And I think that's the best way to approach it, especially if you're in multiple leagues. I think that's something you have to look for.
Yeah, just don't be the most injury optimistic guy. You know, when you hear, especially in football, you hear these timetables, and what do players always say? These guys have been superheroes their whole life. Nobody's going to get up in front of the podium and say, okay, they're saying 4 to 6. I actually am going to need 10 weeks. I don't know what the doctors are talking about. I'm a slow healer. I'm very lazy in my rehab. Nobody's going to say that. Plus, you know, a lot of these guys are competing for their jobs, their livelihoods. Even good players can have difficulty getting a second contract sometimes. So they're marking their territory. I think just in general football, people tend to be distrustful of the media anyway, especially the coaches. I don't look, I'm pro player on this. I mean, football players obviously deserve every cent they make, and I don't blame them for trying to take any agency in their decisions they can. I think that's obvious. I don't want to sound like a virtue signaler when I say that, but I mean, football players earn the money and they take all sorts of risks that are unusual in a vocation. But when you hear 4-6, I want you to focus on the 6. When you hear 4-6, I want you to think 6-8. And the other thing with that is then a player comes back. Like somebody asked me, one of my regular followers on Twitter asked me, what do I do with Kenny Golladay this week if he plays? Is he going to be limited? And I said, I really don't know. Ask me. I said, ask me on the weekend. I'll try to give you a better reply. But sometimes you just need that prove it week. You can't play them right off the box because you don't know how involved they'll be, how many snaps they'll get. God forbid they're in a late game, you know, a Sunday night game or a Monday game that may present all sorts of problems. So sometimes there's an extra gap game that you lose because you're afraid they won't be a full participant in that first game back.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, especially after a guy has missed a game or two, if he's limited on Friday, but, we were just taking extra precautions. Yeah, that's a prove it week. If he's a full go on Friday. Yeah, I might take a chance then, you know, and that you have to. And that's the thing that makes this year especially hard is teams are doing whatever they can to limit the sharing of good information. And this started even at the beginning of training camp. Well, we're not going to let you report on who's practicing with whom.
So silly. Things like that. So silly. You know, just one other tip. This is very obvious. Andy Behrens was really early to this, but just keep this in mind as you're setting your lineups. I'm in one deeper league where I might play Keelan Cole in the Thursday game. So the key is, even though he technically would be kind of a flex type of play for me, I'm going to put him in the static receiver spot.
Yep.
So later in the week, if I need to, you know, if I have a surprise scratch or I'm struggling to fit my lineup the way I want it, I'm going to have the most flexibility later, even though Cole really doesn't, you know, he's not one of my top three receivers. It doesn't matter. The point is, if you play somebody early in the week, put them in the static spot so you keep those flexes available for the widest arrangement. I had one league where I screwed up with this. I had James White in a late game. I should have put him in a flex. I had him as a static running back. And then when the White scratch happened, terrible news with his family. His father dies. His mom hurt in a car accident. James White is one of my favorite all-time players, just a total class guy. And then he's been a great NFL player. I think he should have been the MVP of that Super Bowl against the Falcons. I just want to, you know, acknowledge what happened to the family and just say, I'm thinking about you guys and R.E.P. R.I.P. to his father. But as far as fantasy goes, and it's just an awkward segue, there's no clean way to do it. If I had had White in a flex position, I could have replaced him. Because I had him as a static running back, there was just nothing I could pick up. I didn't have another running back, so I had to eat the zero. And that's just a mistake I should never make. You need to – the shape of your roster and who is in what position has to be to some degree dictated by the shape of the schedule.
Yeah, it does. I think that's a great point. And it's – something you can overlook when you're like doing your Sunday routine, you go through, okay, he's good. You know, do that ahead of time. You know, look at the time, especially last week. There are 3 afternoon games, 1 evening game, 1 Monday game. Kind of easier to manage it. This week we've got 5 late games. It's a little harder. Now we have 7 games to account for if you count the Sunday night and Monday night games. It's a little harder to kind of slot everything, or maybe it's 9-4-1. I forget if it's 9-5-1 or 9-4-1, but it's point is there is it's a little bit more to manage, but it's something you should do. You absolutely should do, and you can do that with the Thursday game. And I'm glad you mentioned Cole. That's a perfect segue because there's a lot going on with this game. We mentioned how Jacksonville's fun. We like watching them. DJ Chark is questionable for this game. It's a chest injury. There was a quote from Doug Maroney saying, I think we're just being cautious here by listing him as questionable. But, yeah, you never know. You know, it's the sort of thing that can rise up. Are you still starting him if you have him anywhere?
Probably, unless something negative comes out in the Thursday flow of the news. But
same.
The interesting thing is, as well as Minshew has played, and they win the first week, the upset, and then they gave Tennessee all they could handle in week 2, but Minshew, his 19 completions in week 1 went to 10 different receivers, and then he used 8 different receivers in week 2. If you had told me that Minshew would be this fun a player and this buzzy a player, I would think, oh, what's Chark, like wide receiver 8? Because I would think that they were just going to pepper Chark coming off the bus. And Minshew has been spreading the ball around. We saw Tyler Eifert look really good last week. Cole's been active. They've gotten Chenault going. So it's a little bit – on one hand, I think it's smart of Minshew to play that way and the offensive design and the job Jay Gruden's doing. I didn't like Jay Gruden as a head coach. Some people have different opinions on how good of a coordinator he could be. I think he's perfectly fine to work with Minshew, and it seems like they're clicking so far. There were some successes in his time at Washington, although the underlings under Peyton were so good. Remember, Sean McVay was a coach there. They had some other people who have gone on to better things that were part of that staff that you never really know with, you know, who's really – like when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, you know, Peterson got a lot of credit. Was it really Frank Reich who was the puppeteer of that offense? And, you know, Eagles haven't been the same since Reich left, although it seems like every 10 minutes an Eagles player gets hurt. So I know that's part of the problem. So I'm a little disappointed in Chark's start. He's been dinged up. They're spreading the ball around. Of course, they only threw 20 passes in the first game. But the good news is that makes Cole in deeper leagues, you know, wide receiver 3, a flex type. I'm plugging him in. I even targeted him in a trade. It's a deeper league. It's a 14-team league. But he was somebody who I wanted to get my hands on. James Robinson looks really good. It's not unusual to see undrafted running backs. There's so much talent in the NFL that just needs a chance. And Robinson seems like one of those guys. And I think it was his camp that encouraged them to get rid of Fournette. They were out on Fournette anyway, but sure. I think Robinson playing well in the summer made that possible.
Hasten the process.
And there's a couple of Miami guys I'm excited about. You know, Myles Gaskin has been their best running back in 2 straight games. And he was a 4-year starter at Washington. He didn't go to like some school nobody heard of. He played in the Pac-12. He was all Pac-12 one year, started as a freshman. I guess he didn't have the greatest combine and maybe the greatest measurable, so he only went in the 7th round. But he looks better than the other 2 guys there. And I've generally been a Breida apologist. Even Howard, I thought in the 7th or 8th round made sense. And now I'm thinking, I want to see if Gaskin can get involved. And one thing about Gesicki, who we know is a spark guy, we know is a combine superstar and all that, he plays so much in the slot. I looked at the stats. I don't know if it's through 1 week or through 2 weeks, but he was the runaway tight end getting the most slot reps. He's basically a receiver.
Right.
And we love tight ends who don't block, who don't chip, who don't put their hand on the ground. We want them to be treated as jumbo receivers. And with Miami, in part because they have no receiver depth, they've had all sorts of injuries, I think Gesicki is a good chance to lead this team in catches and yards. I think the prop on him, I think for the yardage in this game was pretty low, it was in the 40s. I think that's a good opportunity. I think, you know, look, there's a lot of tight ends. It's everybody's got a tight end they like who was inexpensive. Some people thought it was Hurst or Johnny Smith. Hockenson and Fant both look really good. And I don't know what Iowa was doing with all these tight ends because they had George Kittle not that long ago too. But so there's a lot of good emerging tight ends. And it's not like, if you don't have Gesicki, so what? You might have Fant or you might have Smith. But I think Gesicki's going to go down as definitely a profit player in fantasy.
Yeah, I think so too. And you mentioned, you know, they lost two. They had 2 opt-outs and then an injury. And then, you know, add on that, they've had all, like, nagging hamstring injuries in the wide receiving core, you know. Preston Williams kind of looks like he's not quite all the way back. You know, it's a perfect setup there, perfect storm. And I think that's a great point about where he lines up, too. And this should be a good game. Byron Jones is out for the Dolphins, should be good for for the Jacksonville passing game. Yeah, give me lots of points on Thursday night. Don't often think that, predict that. We'd like to say that Thursday night's the sloppy game and all that, but the way the NFL is being played this year, maybe not. Maybe this will be a higher scoring game. Maybe
it's been pinball through 2 weeks, right? It's been, the scoring's been crazy.
Yeah. You mentioned the refereeing. I just finished the rewatch of Detroit and Green Bay. End of the second quarter, there is a sequence there where back-to-back penalties on 25 Harris. Big penalties, both. One was really kind of a cheesy one. Down, I thought it was like leading with the shoulder on a sideline play, like. Are you not allowed to play defense anymore? It's getting to be, and I feel like I'm pretty progressive when it comes to the sports and dealing with sports injuries and things like that. I'm not one of those, oh, they're not tough these days or anything like that. I've seen some stuff. I feel bad for people trying to play defense right now, especially defensive back. It's hard. It's really hard.
It's never been harder to play defense with the speed of the game. and the hitting area, because there's so many parts of the offensive player's body where they don't want you to hit. So it feels like the hitting area sometimes is a postage stamp. And this is a dynamic player moving at a fast rate of speed who may be turning and contorting his body. So what is a defender to do? And just to throw an extra wrench into it, we have never seen a time in the NFL where there is this many mobile quarterbacks. And look, we know the quarterback, and, you know, Rich Rebar said, you know, the cheat code, the Konami code. And we know, I've always said, it's just algebra, right? Tim Tebow is a good fantasy quarterback because he runs so much. He doesn't have to be good at throwing the ball. So we have always known that running for fantasy is good for quarterbacks. But now, when you see some of the athletes, and they get it, they know, the quarterback knows they can't get hit. They know, I mean, they could get hit, but they're going to get the flag. They know they can slide. They know they can duck out of bounds. What does the defender do? There's Kyler Murray running around, and if you lay the lumber to him, or God forbid you try to hit him at the time when he goes to duck down, you're going to hit him in the head. And there's the penalty. Maybe you'll be ejected. It puts a conflict in the defender that I don't know what to tell them. What are you going to say? You'll see the future, you know, be a half second more mentally alert than the other player. It just feels like it's impossible to defend these guys. So I feel for that. And the one thing I can't get my hands on, I know we talked about this before the show. I wrote a blog just saying, taking the loss on Cam Newton. I wasn't sure how healthy he was. He went to New England. I didn't like the puzzle pieces there. All the offensive pieces that Brady was struggling with were left over for Cam. Offensive line coach Dante Scarnecchia, one of the best line coaches of all time, he retired. They didn't really upgrade the receivers. You know, somehow they ended up with N'Keal Harry and a class of receivers that were unbelievable. Harry was hurt part of the year, but you know, it doesn't look like he's anything special. So I wasn't bullish on Newton. And I'm like, well, yeah, I know he's going to run some. They're making him a running back. And not just – he's not the Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. Okay, I'll slide. I'll run out of bounds. I'll pick up the yardage when I can, whatever. Newton runs up the middle and gets tackled by three or four guys. He's a physical runner. He's practically like Marshawn Lynch. And I know two games isn't a lot, but he's on pace right now to be the first quarterback since the merger to have over 200 rushing attempts. Last year, Jackson had 176, I want to say, something in that neighborhood. That was a record post-merger. You want to get somebody who had more rushing attempts, you have to go back to like the 40s or 50s with Spec Sanders, and the game was totally different then. But can you – again, this isn't Newton being judicious about running. This is him running. He's their goal line back. He's their short yardage back. When the game was in the balance against Seattle, everybody in the building knew it was going to be Cam Newton running, especially when they went tight formation, which I think was a mistake. I think you got to have some threat of a pass there, as dynamic as Newton is. But – can Newton – look, I'm taking the loss. I mean, he threw for almost 400 yards in that game, and he's making it work with the pieces that Brady couldn't make it work with. So I tip my cap to McDaniels. I tip my cap to Newton. Belichick has gone out of his way to praise Newton for his work ethic, for his commitment. I think part of that is a little bit of just a sell job to get Newton acclimated and to make him feel like he's – just to give him a certain gravitas with the team, the name of a captain and all that. But Newton looks terrific. The only thing that makes me – kind of reassures me or makes me feel better about missing out on Newton is there's so many right answers at quarterback. I mean, I have Russell Wilson on a lot of teams. I have Matt Ryan on a lot of teams. I have Minshew on some super flex teams. I mean, those teams are doing fine, but still I'm taking the loss on Newton. I just wonder, and I'm not trying to like wish this on any kind of injury or anything, but I just wonder, can you handle Cam Newton? Can you run him like a running back for 16 weeks? Can they get away with that? Is that sustainable? I'm not sure if it is or it isn't. What do you think?
I think they want to be able to lessen some of the punishment he's going to take, but he is bigger. You know, I think one of the things that worked in his favor is that long amount of time off. Mm-hmm. That, you know, he got hurt week two, I think, in that Thursday night game against Tampa Bay that got delayed by the rain and all that, and didn't come back after that. He was clearly hobbled. You know, all this time he's been trying to come back from something. He had plenty of time just to heal. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big deal. I think that's one of the reasons why he's, you know, why he looks dynamic again too. I love that they modeled the offense. They built the offense around what he does. And that's one of the best parts about this is that, you know, remember all that talk? Oh, are they going to have enough time to change the offense? They wouldn't have signed him if they hadn't already been contemplating that. You know, McDaniel's obviously a very talented coordinator. They obviously don't go into anything wantonly. They they think about it ahead of time. And clearly they had this plan that they were, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And, you know, they did this before signing him. They talked, I'm sure they had the conversation. Is this viable? Yes, it is. It's not only is it viable, but it's great. And I think that's one of the things that masks the person, the supporting personnel around him a little bit. It's not a great receiver crew. It's just not. And it's not a great offensive line, but his mobility papers over a lot of that.
Also not the same defense. They had so many opt-outs. They had basically totally new linebacking core. It's not any walk of shame to get exposed by Russell Wilson, especially now that he's got the two best receivers he's ever had. I mean, you know, I was a big Doug Baldwin guy, but I mean, he's got Lockett and Metcalf now, and Metcalf looks like a superstar, and Tyler Lockett is a very, very good player. Yeah. And you know how I feel about Wilson, but did you end up with any Newton? Were you proactive drafting him?
I got him in a lot of leagues, including Sin City, our auction that we did together.
Good for you.
You weren't the only one that has to take the L on Cam Newton. I got him for $6 in a super flex league. Where
$6,
and I was like, "Does everybody hate Newton?" And I was by design trying to get three cheap quarterbacks. That I wanted to go that so I could have players at every other position and have some redundancy. It's one of the things that you and I tend to do in this league. That, you know, used to be the Stopa League, now it's the Sin City League, and you know, it's a lot of spots. There's three receivers, a super flex, and two other flexes, two tight ends. You don't really want to have dead spots. You don't, you know, I think Stars and Scrubs doesn't work very well in that league, but you want quarterbacks, and Cam was a target for sure. I got lucky there that I got him so cheaply, and maybe it's just a function of when he came up.
I have the way I like to frame it, a callback to Robert Altman's movie, The Player, where the tagline of the movie was "No stars, just talent." And in leagues like that, where it's very deep with starters, and you need a roster with a lot of good players on it, I like to have a lot of B-plus guys. On that team, I have Adam Thielen. I have Tyler Lockett. I have Mark Andrews, who everybody liked, but he wasn't Kelsey Kittle expensive. You know, I have a lot of these secondary guys. It's like hitting a three. It's the equivalent of hitting a three wood off the tee when everybody else is hitting driver. And, you know, I think you can win with three woods. Not that my team is okay in that league. It's not – it will contend. I try not to be a victory lap guy, but I'm very proud of the fact that in every year of the Stopa League and what's become the post-Stopa League, I've made the playoffs every year, which I feel good about. And we won the league last year somehow. I don't think we had a great team. I think we just got lucky in the playoffs, but whatever. I mean, the skill of fantasy is make the playoffs and try to get lucky.
Sure.
In any event, I'm a three-wood guy, and when everybody else hit and driver in that league, I want good players. Don't misunderstand that. You need that. And when I took Mark Andrews, when I purchased him, I thought – he had in his range of outcomes, he could be the tight end one. And, you know, it's not like, you know, what was he, tight end three or tight end four in ADP? It's not like people aren't hip to Andrews. So I don't want to act like he was some hidden restaurant or something. But that's the way I generally do that. I'm hitting the three woods. I'm looking for the B plus guys, and I want to beat people with depth. I don't go into that league. I mean, it's easy to say it now because McCaffrey got hurt, but I knew when I went into that league, I wasn't going to be the guy who had McCaffrey.
Same.
At whatever that price was. I don't even think McCaffrey was that expensive, but I don't want to get stuck with the $1 players at the end. I think, now granted, you know, some of the guys that I chose proactively haven't, you know, I thought Chris Herndon was going to be good. I've kind of walked that back now. I'm thinking long-term with Chase Edmonds that could be a long-term thing, and who knows? I mean, if Drake never gets hurt, maybe Edmonds doesn't become anything of use. But in that type of format, I like the three-wood. I like the no stars, just tell them.
Yeah, I think that's smart. I think that's really smart, and that's what I like to do, too. I kind of went a little higher. I mean, I was aiming for end of the first-round guys. Got Chubb, Jacobs, and Dalvin Cook. In that league, and I also added
you have all three of those guys. Wow!
And I got and the thing is, I was planning on getting two, and when Jacobs stopped at like 27, 28, I was like, okay, I'm getting them. And when I got Chubb for the price I did, that's when I realized I could afford three, and still fit everything that I wanted to.
Wow, you have a good team. I guess the only thing I'm looking at your roster now. I'm not sure who Beckham is anymore. And you need to figure out the second quarterback, because even if Garoppolo is healthy, I think it's open to question how good he is. I think he's closer to being just an average guy. And if Kittle's going to be hurt and if Debo's going to be hurt, we'll see if Debo ever gets back to the player he can be when healthy. But you'll need to solve that out. But, man, Cook, Chubb, and Jacobs. Jacobs is a guy I think I let my distrust of John Gruden cloud me on Jacobs. And then even this year, I was like, well, I didn't trust they wanted to throw him the ball, and they added all these receivers and all that. And I wasn't proactive with Jacobs. I didn't want to draft Waller. And those look like huge mistakes. I still think the Raiders are like a 6-10 team. I know they started off 2-0. I still don't think they're necessarily that good. I'm not a believer in Derek Carr, but right. I wish I had Jacobs and Waller on some teams. I don't think I have them anywhere.
I was just going to say, they don't need to be a good team for those two to pay off too. That's sure. The good thing. I mean, yes, you want Jacobs on a winning team. Preferably that means you're grinding it out like they did the other
He's day. Good, Ben. He makes so much yards after contact, and they have a good line anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And before I get too proud of myself on that team, I lost to superfan Ted Bell this past week because I got Jonesed pretty hard, but that's okay. He had a great week, and I did not. So it goes. But you're right. Quarterback is going, but it's kind of I knew the wart. I had quarterbacks with warts, and I was hoping one would really pan out. One weekend, it looks like it has, and the others would be serviceable. And I always get three if I can in that league. That's one of the
goals. Quarterback depth at Superflex is very important, and it gives you flexibility. And in one of the other Brad Evans leagues, I had three quarterbacks, and Andy Behrens needed a quarterback. And it's funny, he was initially sniffing around on Bridgewater, who was ostensibly my quarterback three. I think I have Matt Ryan at one, mm-hmm. Reese at two, and Bridgewater at three. And then I got to the point where if he was willing to, quote-unquote, upgrade to Breeze, I was actually more comfortable doing that, getting more back, and just living with Bridgewater anyway, because I just want Drew Brees out of my fantasy life. It's been posited that maybe this is his Peyton Manning final season. Maybe there's a team with a really good roster and they're a contender and they could go deep in the playoffs, but Brees is not the guy. Now Manning was awful that last season. I don't think Brees will be to that level, but
agreed.
Let's just say I don't have any fear. And look, we'll see what happens. I mean, I once famously traded Tom Brady in the middle of the season, worried that the Patriots were in trouble, and they won the Super Bowl that year. And it was one of the worst trades anybody's ever made in fantasy. I'm not afraid to make a move that might be a mistake. I think if you live scared in any discipline of life, if you don't trust your instincts, you're making a huge mistake, and you have to live with the fact that sometimes it's just going to look bad, and that can't bother you. But I don't have any fear that I'm going to look back and think, oh man, Brees was quarterback six. Well, I screwed up. I never should have traded him. I was actually kind of glad to get off that bus.
Yeah, I don't blame you. We I remember our conversation on SiriusXM last week, how we both kind of took some flack for our Brees ranking. And if not for garbage time, he would have lived down to it. I mean, he got 312 yards, but 100 of them were in the last like 6 minutes of the game. And
when the Raiders were giving him short stuff because they needed two scores, and Brees was – it's funny how quarterbacks sometimes it almost seems like they're trying to pad their stats or just improve their quarterback rating by taking a bunch of 7-yard completions. I don't think Brees has confidence throwing the ball downfield, and of course he's missing his best receiver too.
Yeah, that's right. I have him like 15 or 16 this week against the Packers, and I almost think that might be high, but we'll see. I share your distrust. Before we move on to other notes for this week, a quick note from our sponsor, Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is a fantasy sports stock market on which you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. Ever heard someone say, I've had stock in this player since day one? Well, now, Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility, and it forces you to check your assertion, too. You had stock in Patrick Mahomes' rookie year? You knew this would happen? Now it's a reality. Create a portfolio of all your favorite athletes and get closer to the game than ever before. To get started, simply visit PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players just like you would real stocks. Each game is like an earnings report. If the player beats his projection, his stocks move up. It's that easy. You can trade your shares of players at any time as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Get started today by visiting PredictionStrike.com and sign up with code ROTOWIRE to get an additional $10 with your first deposit of $20 or more. I'm Jeff Erickson. My guest is Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Fantasy Sports, also known as the verbal doppelganger to Rufus Peabody, apparently, judging by that. We have you guys each week. Rufus is on Wednesdays. You're on Thursdays on the show. And you're both known for your measured, thoughtful, non-emotional takes. It's kind of funny. Some people are hype guys. You guys are thoughtful guys, and I think these are better conversations.
I do too. First of all, I want to acknowledge that it's flattering to be mentioned in the same breath as Rufus Peabody, and we're talking about an Ivy League guy who's one of the sharpest people in his industry. And you know, Massey Peabody was, I think, revolutionary and innovative, and Rufus is his bona fide speak for themselves. So
yeah, I made the joke emphasis on the word sharp when it comes to him. He is the sharp. You know, they're sharps and squares. I'm Mick Squarixon. He is the sharp.
I just love that. Again, he's, you know, he understands that you have to try to go into this as unemotionally as possible. I'm not saying, look, you want to watch the game and yell and scream and cheer and rant and do all that. You can do whatever you feel. But I think the approach of Rufus, the thoughtful, you can almost kind of sense that he's got his, you know, his hand on his chin as he's just kind of pondering what's going on. That's kind of the style that I have. Again, you know, it's a reach to compare me to Rufus Peabody because I don't have a Yale education. He's just a really sharp guy. And I joked when somebody said that we had similar type of voices. I said, yeah, you know, if it's something really smart being said, it's probably Rufus, not me. But a really great guest that you guys have on the show and somebody who I consider a friend and just I love his approach. I love how he looks at the game. And I also just love how he's just trying to find the truth. And he's not trying to tell you, oh, yeah, I called this. And, oh, well, let me quote tweet something I said 8 months ago that looks good now. He's not about that. He's just trying to look forward. He's trying to be honest and transparent. And just there's a lot in his approach that I admire and I try to take in my own game.
Same. And when we're doing, like, staff picks and all that, when he's like strongly on one side and I'm on the other, and maybe even in some cases as a best bet, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to change it because that's like, it's supposed to be my pick and it's already in usually by then. But same time, like, oh, I don't feel so great.
Let me ask you about staff picks. Because I have a problem, Jeff. I keep picking the friggin' Jets and it's so frustrating.
I did too this week.
Oh. I hate Adam Gase. I hate this team, but it's 11 freaking points. That's right. So much in the NFL. It can't be as simple as just pick against the bad coaches because there's a point spread and it gets to the point where nobody wants to take the bad team. So you have to hold your nose, right? I took the Jets this week. I don't feel good about it, but I see those big numbers. I don't like to spot double digits in the NFL. I think if you almost reflexively took every double digit underdog in the NFL, you'd probably be doing it right.
Yeah. I set my line at 8.5, I think, for that one. And then I was like, oh, I thought the line would be 7. You know, we do it. Listen, I do this whole guess the lines thing where you set your own line, you try to guess what the line's going to be. And, you know, I'm pretty rigorous about not getting spoiled by a line, you know, which, believe it or not, it's kind of hard to do. You know, it's
what do you mean by that?
So common parlance now. But I usually am pretty good, except for maybe a game or two, you know, a month or so that I get spoiled on. I hear from like a local beat writer or whatever.
Oh, I see.
But, you know, I said my line's 8.5. I think it'll be 7. Oh, it's 10.5. Really? Dang it. I'm on the Jets. You know, you set it higher hoping that you're going to be on one side and you're still taking the other. I wonder what my percentage is on. I bet you I'm actually better on that when, you know, I pick something despite myself.
It's interesting that the Steelers -4 is your best bet of the week. And I hated doing it. I took the Texans. Another thing was who wants to be on the side of Bill O'Brien?
Sure.
I don't really know what to make of the Steelers. I know their defense is very good, but I mean, they played the Giants, who couldn't get out of their own way in the first game, and then they played Denver, who had a quarterback injury right away. And I don't think Driscoll's all that bad. Maybe he's as good as Drew Lock anyway. But the point is, the Broncos don't have a plus quarterback, and for all the problems with the Texans, they still have Deshaun Watson. I took Houston. I'm not passionate about it. I'm not going to put a penny on that game. I'm nervous that maybe I'm on the wrong side of it, but interesting to see Steelers are your best bet.
Yeah, you know, part of that is because it's the offensive line for the Texans. I just think they're not good. I think that they're really doing a poor job projecting Watson, who I thought was running for his life against the Ravens, and I see this as a very similar matchup, and it's on the road. But you're right that Watson's the best quarterback they've faced, and it's not especially close. You know, Will Fuller is dealing with a hammy again. You know, he stayed in the game. He came back into the game, but he didn't get targeted. He was just in decoy mode after that. Kind of like, here we go again with Will Fuller, by the way. Of course, the B.O.B. factor is definitely present. It's definitely one of those things you're kind of thinking of, like, you know, he'll punt it away at some point in time, too. But that's baked into the line, theoretically. It's kind of like,
sure,
just like we were talking about with Gase and the Jets, the O'Brien factor is there, too, probably. Although I think the public views O'Brien as a better coach than the fantasy gambling community does.
You know, for as much as I don't like Bill O'Brien, especially the executive and a lot of things in game, I don't like either. I mean, they've made the playoffs a lot of times in Houston, so you have to respect that.
They were good enough to get a big lead to blow against the Chiefs in the first place.
Right. Also, I think Watson, I love Deshaun Watson as a player. I love him as a person. He's just a long been some. I loved him in college at Clemson. And just a really good, you know, he reminds me so much of Warwick Dunn. I mean, he just understands his role in society and how he can make the world a better place and be a good person. And he's so admirable to me. But I think, the line isn't good. But he also, a lot of those sacks are on him. Every quarterback, it's like when Wentz got sacked 8 times in the first game, it's so easy to say, oh, you know, Eagles have so many injuries on the offensive line. You know, Wentz doesn't have a chance. But every blitz has an indicator before the snap. And sacks, you have to watch the game. And to be honest with you, to really get this right, you have to probably understand football at a level that is probably over my head. But, you know, maybe you need to be a former quarterback or former coach or Greg Cosell or somebody. But the point is sacks, it isn't just, oh, the line stinks. So it's, you know, that's why they're allowing sacks. And quarterbacks are culpable. And a lot of times they hold the ball too long. A lot of times they had a hot read. They didn't throw it. A lot of times they didn't adjust the protection. Yes. Are there jailbreaks where the quarterback has absolutely no chance? Yes. But I think sacks are actually – every team is different, of course. But I think sacks are a little bit more of a quarterback stat than they are an offensive line stat. And I think as much as I love Russell Wilson, I think he – you know, you have to live – it's a gift and curse when you have that playmaking ability that sometimes you're going to try to make that extra guy miss and buy an extra second and you're not going to see the other defender who's on the other side of you. I mean, every once in a while you're going to run into that. And that you have to live with that with Wilson, and you have to live with that with Watson. So as much as I don't like their line, I do think at times Watson, in the aim of trying to make an explosive play, sometimes he runs into a sack too.
Yeah, and you mentioned Wentz, and I think that's a great example. He actually didn't get sacked against the Rams after getting sacked 8 times by football team the week before. But rewatching that Washington game, you could see that – There's one thing about getting sacked, and there's another thing about making that sack worse. Like, Wentz turned there was a third down play where they were on the 25 of Washington, and he got pushed back like 13 yards. He kept trailing backwards, backpedaling, couldn't get rid of it. Another time when he got sacked, there was a sack fumble where he didn't put it away. He kind of, you know, wandered into traffic. Again, didn't get rid of it. I was seeing PFF, was doing a breakdown of him a little bit, not trusting his receivers not making the right breaks, a little bit of all that. So all that's there, but there's kind of a duty to mitigate. And Wentz didn't do that.
Right. A quarterback, I'm glad you mentioned the fumbles. It's like you look at Daniel Jones, and if he's going to be special, if he's going to be a long-term answer for the Giants, he needs ball security. He needs to get better. That was a huge problem. And again, you want him to hold the ball. You want him to look downfield. You want him to not be too sensitive to the rush where they perceive pressure when sometimes it isn't there, or where they get skittish and all that. I mean, you need to have the nerve to hold the ball, but you can't give it away. Right. That's why the Buccaneers went for Brady, right? I mean, he doesn't have the arm talent that Winston has, but the idea was that Brady would protect the ball. Of course, you know, he hasn't really done a great job of that through 2 weeks, but the pocket awareness, it's a huge thing. It's a hard thing to quantify sometimes, especially in college. I think of somebody like Matt Leinart, where he was so good at USC, but the pocket was so clean and the receivers are wide-ass open, and it doesn't replicate what you're going to see in the NFL, where the windows are so much tighter and the pockets are generally muddier, especially if you get drafted by a team that's a losing team. They may not have a great offensive line. I mean, look at – I've been impressed with Burrow. I've been pro-Burrow the whole time. I would have liked if maybe he got off to a better start, but I mean, look, that offensive line is terrible. They've been behind in every game, so it makes it easier to defend schematically. But he's seeing much more pressure than he ever saw at LSU. Not that he wasn't rushed, and the SEC has good defenses, but it's just interesting. I mean, I don't know how many games he lost at LSU. It wasn't many. I mean, he's already lost a couple of games with the Bengals. You can see him getting a little frustrated by it, but sometimes it's hard to know. I'm still pro Burrow, and I want to be clear on that. But I think in a case of like a guy like Matt Leinart, you couldn't really gauge his pocket awareness at USC because he was never asked to play under duress that much.
Right, right. And when you look at the Bengals and you see, oh, you signed Bobby Hart? Oh, you extended Bobby Hart? Oh, he's starting? Really? You know, that's kind of where the Bengals are at. But, you know, it's funny. There's all this optimism about how they were spending money this offseason, but it's kind of like winning the winter or winning the offseason. You know, you have to win the offseason because the season wasn't so great to begin with. And, you know, there's a long way to go. And that's pretty much where we're at there. But, yeah, I agree. He's got a lot to learn. Like that scramble play where he tried to spin move on the outside, and they just said, okay, nice spin. Now you go down. You know, just get rid of the ball, please.
5 years from now, where's Joe Burrow? What is Joe Burrow?
Joe Burrow has one Pro Bowl under his belt, and at least maybe two. I believe. I'm buying into it. He looks the part to me. And I think with a little bit more protection, a little bit more experience at the speed of the NFL, he's going to be fine. I mean, he made mostly good decisions that game. I mean, there, you know, later on, same situation, he learned to get rid of it better, and he made a lot of good reads. I like that he didn't have that defeatist attitude at all. There's a lot to like about him. I like the poise. It's just what can the Bengals surround him with, and especially on the line. I think they've got a lot of skill position players around them. Higgins looked pretty promising, and of course I think he's got a connection with Boyd. Still think there's Green's not completely bad. I don't think the cheese has gone completely bad on him, but you know, there's a little corner of mold on there, but I still think there's a little bit left there.
You know, who are you worried about? You said you're not completely off on Green. Are you worried about T.Y. Hilton? Are you worried about Todd Gurley? Is there anybody that jumps out as a player like, oh man, get me off? I talked about getting Breeze off my team.
Yeah, well, I Love Bell was on my do not fly list. Mm-hmm. Todd Gurley is not on any of my teams, so I'm not worried about him. I'm just, you know, although Gurley's holding up so far. Gurley is also you know getting a pretty decent sized workload too, but. You know, I just don't want to be there for that. You know,
let me contest that on Gurley. Doesn't have a broken tackle yet. Yeah. Some goal line carries went to Ito Smith last week, and after getting all of one receiving yard in week one, I don't think they targeted Gurley in week two. Talk about a narrow usage tree, right? It's those three receivers in Hurst, and they're throwing a lot of passes, and they're not throwing those passes to Todd Gurley. There's a guy. If he has a game that's sellable, if he, I don't know, has like 115 yards and a touchdown in a given week, that's the week to get off that bus. I don't have any long term faith in Gurley.
Yeah, I don't either. And I don't ha- I don't ha- I just say I'm just saying from a look from afar, not on my team sort of way. He's been fine so far, but you know, I haven't had to examine that one. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
I won't be trading for him. I won't be trying a buy low on him. I definitely won't be on Bell. And nothing against Bell's. I think it's just if Bell ends up on another team, maybe he has a resurgence. I think there's no chance on the Jets. Just none.
I mean, how can you feel confident about anything? The Jets? I was pro Chris Herndon before the season. I've walked that one back. I've even cut him in some leagues.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it. And poor Darnold. I mean, didn't you want to talk about different organization, maybe a different fate? And just look at these Dolphins. Look at Parker. Look at Drake. You know, they're not perfect going forward since, but it shows that there is at least something there. You know, Gesicki for that matter too. Removing that element has been a boon to all of them.
Yeah, I know it's become a convenient joke, but I mean, I like to say that what's the key to success, right? It's hard work, it's attention to detail, and it's escaping Adam Gase.
Yeah,
I still think Darnold, who's younger than Joe Burrow. And I guess that's going to be true for the rest of their lives. That's the way birthdays work. I still think Sam Darnold can be a really good player. But we talked about Burrow earlier. I just want to point out that I think his upside. I would think in 5 years think of the best you've ever felt about Carson Wentz. I think that's what Burrow will be in 5 years, something like that. Where maybe he's not the poster child of the league, but I think he'll be certainly a plus starter. He could go to a Pro Bowl. He could lead teams to the playoffs. That type of thing.
Yeah,
but. Darnold, if the Jets bottom out and they're in pole position to get Lawrence or get whatever quarterbacks, Fields, whoever comes out, and Darnold ends up, okay, they're going to move on from him or whatever. If I were an organization, I would try to get that guy. I still think there's a lot of talent there. I think he's got the type of makeup that is conducive to having a plus career. I still believe in Sam Darnold. I just think right now he's just been thrown into shark-infested waters and they're like, swim. Good luck.
Yeah.
And I don't know how anybody could come out of there handling it. The offensive line was so bad last year. And we'll see. When teams fortify an offensive line, it still takes time. I've heard Ross Tucker talk about this. Maybe it still takes like a month for that unit to really gel.
Right.
So they did the things you want to do when your offensive line stinks. They brought in reinforcements, but maybe that stuff needs some time. It doesn't help that Crowder's out of the mix. They didn't bring back Anderson. They made the move for Perryman, and he was hurt all summer. I just don't know how Darnold could possibly succeed with everything around him crumbling.
I agree. And yet you see these, like, quarterbacks that fail that are like elite, you know, elite level. Look at Josh Rosen. Look at the environment he stepped into in Arizona and then Miami, and he's essentially done in this league. I mean, maybe he gets a chance somewhere else and gets a chance. You know, Blake Bortles, you know, is now kind of a punchline. He took a team to the AFC Championship game. You know, defense really took that team, but you know, well, we're quibbling now. But you know, he was there. He wasn't like hindering them from getting there either. And you know, Blaine Go Gabbert. You know, sometimes you know teams do right by cutting bait, but you kind of wonder, like, what if he had stepped into a more ready-made situation? You know, would he have been better off? You know, what if he actually learned his ropes not playing for a year and then jumped in? You know, you kind of wonder these, you know, if situations that used to happen a lot more frequently in the NFL, that do you serve that apprenticeship and actually become better because of that?
I guess the hope would be you think of it, it's unrealistic to think that somebody's going to be like a Steve Young who was horrible with the Buccaneers and then he landed in the perfect captain's chair with the 49ers, although Young was legitimately a superstar in his own right. But I also think of somebody in back to the Bucs. Think of like Vinny Testaverde, who was just an interception machine. Remember, he owns the record for interceptions in the season, Tampa Bay. It's not Winston. Vinny had more than the 30 James threw last year, although the context was different.
Right.
Interceptions were a lot more common in Vinny's day. But he ended up being a plus starter for the Browns. He ended up in the Ravens, I think it was. And then he had a really good year for the Jets and played into his 40s. And actually is really high up on a lot of NFL leaderboards. Part of it's just the counting and the volume, but I think had a respectable career that started off horribly because he landed, you know, much like Rosen did and maybe Darnold did. He just landed in a situation that I don't think was tenable for anybody. So maybe some of these quarterbacks, you know, maybe Rosen again, yeah, look, upside talent. I know that the draft is incredibly inexact. And it's not that uncommon. You know, Brady was a sixth-round pick. Tony Romo wasn't drafted. Kurt Warner wasn't drafted. You know, I do like Minshew, who was a late-round pick and all that stuff. But Josh Rosen was liked, was respected, was rated as a prospect for a reason. And he played at UCLA. You know, it's not like he played against bad competition or something. And I don't know Rosen personally. I don't see any reason why he went. The situation specifically that he was in at the time looked really difficult to win, and then he gets thrown into a Miami situation and he got almost no chance to play. And I would take a chance on Rose. I know he's on somebody's practice squad and I can't remember who off the top of my head, but why not take a chance on a guy like that and just bring him in and let him absorb at his own pace and let him kind of fly under the radar for a while, and maybe you can catch something. I would always be looking to try to benefit from somebody else's, and you see back to the Patriots. I mean, what have they done with Newton? New England's done this so many times where they've taken the veteran player, the shine is off the player and the cost comes way down, and they make a chance. They take a chance on them. And a lot of them haven't worked out. You know, Chad Johnson didn't work out, and they brought in Torrey Holt at the end of his career and he was done. Joey Galloway had nothing left. But every once in a while you get Randy Moss. Every once in a while you get Corey Dillon. Every once in a while you get Rodney Harrison. Every once in a while you get what looks like Cam Newton this year. And That's just being smart, seeing the upside. You're buying it at the lowest acquisition cost, and you're getting a guy who may have a lot of good football left. So I don't know. I'd like to see. I don't know if Josh Rosen can't play. I feel like he got no chance. I'm not comfortable saying that Josh Rosen's just a throwaway. I understand why nobody wants to play him right now, but yeah. And I feel much more. This take is much more passionate for Darnold. If he becomes available, I would love to see him get off that team and see what he could do with a coach, you know, just a different voice in his ear. I just think he's been set up to fail.
I agree. And Rosen's, by the way, is on Tampa Bay's practice squad.
Okay.
But I thought I knew that, but I had to verify that. He was 10th overall. For some reason, I thought he was like 5th or 6th, but he was 10th. But yeah,
same Darnold, difference. I mean, overall. Top 10 pick. And he was considered, I mean, he was somebody who people thought might go 2 or 3.
Yeah. Yep, that's right.
Look, it's hard, man. You know, Mitch Trubisky famously went second in his draft class. And the funny thing about Trubisky is I actually think he's a good guy and handles a very unwinnable situation really well. I think he's pretty reasonable with the media, in spite of the fact that whenever he does anything wrong, he just gets hammered on. And of course, Foles is just sitting there, you know, ready to come in whenever Trubisky really, really wets the bed, which I think everybody thinks is going to happen eventually. But it's just hard. It's, you know, in college, Mahomes made a lot of mistakes and had a gunslinger mentality, and people, not every, you know, read the scouting reports.
Oh yeah.
You know, I remember reading the scouting report, and this is more me having fun than anything, because it's just hard. It's hard to scout. Even, you know, Belichick's probably the best coach of all time, and he's made a million bad draft picks. You know, again, N'Keal Harry may be the latest, although we'll see. It's still early to say definitively what Harry is and isn't. But the Patriots have had a lot of trouble drafting receivers. I don't know why the Steelers have the cheat code, have the answer key with the receivers, and nobody else can seem to figure it out. But I was laughing last year about the scouting report on A.J. Brown that said maybe he was more quick than fast, and maybe he lacks swagger in the Alabama game. And,
yeah,
you know, these really incredibly pedantic little things. And I'm like, really? This is why you're not going to draft this guy? And then you watch him play, and he looks like Terrell Owens. Yeah. Now, look, I didn't see this coming with A.J. Brown. It's interesting. He played on a college team that had so much talent, right? They couldn't get a quarterback. They couldn't kind of get adequate coaching. But it's just funny. I love to look back at scouting reports and see what they thought of people. And it just underscores how hard it is. And even the people who are the smartest people in the league routinely make picks that don't make sense. That's because crazy. It's just hard to know. And you're investing in a 20 or 21-year-old. Who's to say how dedicated he's going to be to his craft? You know, or how his body's going to mature as he gets a little bit older. I mean, this is, some of this stuff is unknowable.
Yeah, I know. And it really does illustrate what an inexact science it is. Some of the comments when the Chiefs traded up to get Mahomes at 10 were very definitely not very complimentary. And, you know, it's funny. He got to serve his apprenticeship. You know, he had Alex Smith, who worked with him. You know, and Andy Reid, he came into the right system. Again, we're talking about, what if Josh Rosen gets drafted by the Chiefs instead of by the Cardinals with no offensive line in front of him? You know, what if he got to play with Cliff Kingsbury as opposed to, Arians with a foot out the door? I mean, it wasn't Arians. I take that back. Arians was gone the year before that. But what if, you know, what happens if he gets that perfect cushy setup in Kansas City? Well, maybe we're talking about him in a much different light. And
what if Mitch Trubisky is on the Chiefs, right?
Right.
With Andy Reid. I hear you. And I love the what if game. One of my favorite what ifs was the year the Chargers drafted Phillip Rivers. Remember Eli Manning didn't want to go there, and they ended up with Rivers, who Schottenheimer fell in love with, I think it was at the Senior Bowl. Rivers signed late his rookie year. He didn't get signed until, I think it was late August. So the idea of Rivers starting right away was out the window because he wasn't in camp. He didn't get the reps in. So they had to play Drew Brees, who at the time was just thought as a kind of an ordinary guy and somebody who was obviously going to lose his job the moment Rivers came. Well, Rivers signed late. They had to play Brees. Brees had a fantastic season. But at that point, they've invested in Rivers, so they can't keep Brees. So then Brees goes to Miami. They do the medicals. Saban's there at the time. They decide they don't trust his shoulder. He signs with New Orleans. There's a couple of great what-ifs with Brees. If Rivers signs on time, the league maybe never knows that Drew Brees is a Hall of Fame quarterback. Maybe he's a backup the whole season, and then he gets signed as a back. He gets backup money somewhere else. He plays behind somebody who's good. He never gets a chance to play. You could have a totally different career. And who knows what might have happened in Miami. Maybe Nick Saban is with the Dolphins for 10 years.
Right. So many amazing what ifs there. It's really, we could spend a lot of time doing that. A couple quick notes before we sign off. Jalen Reagor, bad news about him. Torn UCL in his thumb. Expected to go on IL. I don't think he's on IL yet, but you're going to be without him for a while. That's tough. You know, he had the shoulder injury first and now this. You can't really buy much of a break.
Yeah, man. I guess the winner and all that is Goddard. This is other than the Patriots with Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. I can't remember a team having two fantasy playable tight ends, but the Eagles are going to have that all season. I didn't proactively draft Goddard. I just liked other tight ends, and I thought the presence of Ertz. I knew they would find ways for both of those guys to be productive, but I also thought that they would finally maybe get a break at receiver. I wasn't in on Jeffrey, but I thought maybe some other guys would pop. But with Rieger out of the mix, I would think if there's a winner and all that, it's going to be Goddard.
Yeah, and maybe a little DeSean Jackson too. I think Wentz is the loser in this though too. He already has trust issues with his wide receivers. Now you take away one of them. Ugh. Yeah, it's not great. Although they do get the Bengals, and I think Goddard does tear apart the Bengals this week. I think Miles Sanders goes crazy. Love him in DFS. I mean, you have to pay up for him for sure. But
love that he got 75. I think it was 75% snaps his first game back. So a lot of times you need that prove it game. I mean, they said loud and clear, all systems go. He's healthy.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, only the one fumble, but you know, other than that, he looked great. And I think there's probably a recovery week coming up for them this week. We'll see. If they struggle against my Bengals, Scott, then you know there's some other systemic issues going on there.
Who did you take in that game?
I might have taken the Bengals to cover. I think I set the line at like 5.5.
I did too. I think I have a Burrow problem. Whether it's I believe in Burrow or I want Burrow to be a thing, Tyler Boyd's a commonly owned player. I try not to let that influence who I pick.
Sure.
Of course. I just want wins. Well, you know, I mean, I'm ostensibly a New England fan, and I'll pick against them in a drop of a hat. But
Right.
And as you will with your Bengals.
I got a side bet to win against you here too. And I know you got off to a good start. I don't know what you did last week, but I'm already playing catch up there, so
I'm a game up on you, and all of us are 500 or better. Check that out, rotowire.com staff picks, Chris Liss, Dalton Del Don, who I do a gambling podcast with on Yahoo. We just taped right before this show, so I want you to check that out. And of course, Chris Liss, Rotowire Kingpin.
Yep, and Kevin Payne.
Did I mention Kevin Payne? I'm sorry if I didn't. Yeah, Kevin Payne, of course, a long time.
Buffalo Mafia has to be represented on
Rotowire. Good guy, good friend. Love Kevin.
Yeah. Okay, and then we haven't even touched on we did touch on Herbert and Taylor a little bit. I forgot. Yeah, we did that. That was one of the only things. Julio Jones is the other one I want to talk about. I have a really hard time with him and Davante Adams this week and where to rank them. I think I just moved him down to like the 30s, I think, right now. I'll move him back up if I see a full practice. But you know, you made the Fred Sanford comparison to Julio so many times. It's always ingrained in my head with him when I think of him, but it's looking worse right now.
Yeah, and Adams has a late game on Sunday, which makes it complicated too.
Yep.
Although at least it may be possible in some leagues. Again, obviously context, you know, your mileage will vary, but maybe you could have a Lazard or an MVS as a pivot play, or Traquan Smith or somebody like that, somebody in one of the later games, or maybe you have to take a chance on like Willie Snead in the Monday night game, or Robinson, one of those guys. Well, what a great Monday night game, by the way. But I'm not optimistic about Julio or Adams right now, although you know how this injury game goes. I mean, Friday's the day that really matters. A lot of times Wednesday is a maintenance day, and most coaches there will be some exceptions. Sometimes teams will say emphatically, so-and-so is a veteran, they don't have to practice on Friday. But most coaches, the party line is, if you don't practice on Friday, you're not playing. So Friday, I always say when people ask me questions, you know, well, why you rank this guy here and should I play this guy? It's always, I got to see what happens on Friday, or, you know, for the teams that play on Monday, I got to see what happens on Saturday.
Right. And you know, for the most part that works too. I mean, unless you have your pivot is the Thursday game, usually it's okay. I mean, late in the season, the Saturday game's another little wrinkle that we get to deal with. But for now, well, that's, you know, the thing is, there are some tough ones in the Chark we mentioned earlier. Devontae Parker is another one who's kind of less than 100% this week too. There's some tough calls to make.
I also think with the shape of the injury so far, we think of fantasy football a lot of times as, okay, I do my bids in the middle of the week, and then on the weekend I'll set a lineup and watch them go. But maybe Thursday and Friday are, you kind of take a day off, let your feet up. I think this year more than ever, we need to grind every day. I mean, I know, great, nothing in most leagues, you can't do anything on Mondays and Tuesdays, at least the leagues that I'm in. And I like that. I don't think it should be a 7-day period, but I feel like the need to stay, look, I want you to get out and have a life. I want you to get out and play a round of golf or go do stuff with your kids or walk your dog, whatever it is. But I feel like the need to stay in the know with news and with the flow of certain situations on Thursday and Friday and be able to make it those secondary pickups after the bids have been processed, I feel like that's going to be more important. It's always important, but I feel like it's going to be more important than ever. And also, another reason why this is important is if you, like in one of my leagues in the fishbowl, I two-hand shoved on Mike Davis. I don't know if it's the right move or not, but now I have no leverage in Fab. So that means I got to be look ahead. I got to be winning on Thursday and Friday or winning a week ahead on waivers because I can't beat anybody with a bid anymore.
You can't beat people, but sometimes, you know, throwing those secondary bids out there, you'd be surprised what you get to keep them honest bid sometimes.
You never know.
You know, just keep grinding, dude.
And then you get those guys and you immediately think, okay, well, why is this player a brick?
Right.
Why do I not go out this guy? Hey, let me ask you this. We didn't talk about this. Do you see – are you excited, whether it be this week or long term, the Giants and Niners are playing each other? What do you make of those backfields?
Well, I want the guy that catches the passes, so I want McKinnon over Wilson. But I do think it will be close to a timeshare there. I think McKinnon's like a – I think it'll go like 60-30-10 with Hasty being in the mix. Hasty's okay. The wild card.
Sure.
You know, Hasty breaks off a big one. Then all of a sudden, you know, he could be a 50-50 guy. I still am a Mostert guy long term, but I mean, how can you not worry about his durability at times? I'm encouraged that it sounds like the way they're talking, it's only going to be a week or two with him. Whereas Tevin Coleman, it's minimum of 4 weeks.
I don't think Tevin Coleman's any good anyway.
Yeah,
I love Mostert. You know, I another shout out to Rebar. He posted a list of all the Mostert touchdowns in his career. He scores from distance. I imagine if he got the cheap touchdowns. He's such a likable guy. He feels like he's been cut by every team. And I like that he just asked for a modest raise, and the team's like, you know what? You've earned it. And he got paid. I mean, he didn't get mega bucks, but I like that they felt just the goodwill there, and they wanted to take care of him. But if Shanahan's so good with design and Breida came out of nowhere and Mostert came out of nowhere. And if you look at Shanahan, I don't have the list in front of me, but you look at some of the running backs he's had when he was a position coach or coordinator and some of the guys who came out of relative obscurity. We see that a lot of times in the NFL anyway. I mean, there's been so many good running backs who were late round draft picks or undrafted. So I'm not one to act like Shanahan has the exclusive rights to that. But he's, of course, one of the great all-time run design coaches. He learned at the feet of his father, Mike Shanahan, who I think should be in the Hall of Fame. So I just want, you know, I would not be surprised. I can't predict it. And I know this sounds like a cheap cop-out, but if at the end of the day it's like Hasty has 95 yards and a touchdown, I'll just kind of go, well, that's Shanahan for you. Yeah. Not that he's trying to trick us up, but I think that Shanahan is such a good designer that a lot of people could be successful in his system. I'm not as optimistic on McKinnon as some others just because I don't think they view him as a player who can withstand a lot of touches. So I think Wilson is certainly going to have a role. I think a third running back is going to have a role. They may even – maybe Hushchek gets a couple of cheap touches just to kind of get in the fantasy way. So that makes me a little bit nervous. As far as the Giants go, I'm not buying it with Freeman. I mean, look, if I could have gotten Freeman at the cheapest acquisition cost, I would have. That obviously wasn't going to happen once he signed. He was not somebody I proactively went after, so I don't have him. And even though Wayne Gallman didn't dress last week, because Lewis is so old, I don't think there's a lot of upside, NFL old anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a lot of upside with Lewis. My point here would be I'm glad I didn't go after Freeman. If he's good, God love him. But I'm glad I didn't go after him. And I still think in deeper leagues, I don't mind putting a chip on Gallman and just letting him sit on my bench for a week or two and see if he can do something. I know he's guaranteed nothing, and he could easily be the first guy I cut, you know, maybe in a few days. But the main takeaway there is I don't believe in Freeman.
I can buy that. I put in modest bids on him and didn't get him yet. You know, definitely Davis over any of the Giants options.
Sure.
And I like throwing a token bid on Wilson if you can. I think that's, you know, you might even steal a goal line carry because he's definitely capable at the goal line. We saw him being a goal line thief in the past already. So I kind of think that that's at least he'll get something like that going on for him there. So, yeah. I think that's pretty much right.
And Dalton Del Don, our mutual friend and my colleague at Yahoo, he was adding Wilson everywhere he could. Yeah. And then when the news was trending towards Wilson earlier on Wednesday, I did the quick one of the things I love about Yahoo is you can do a league availability check, and it immediately shows you a player's status in all your leagues. And I looked, it's like Dalton owns him. I did get some Wilson, though, for free in a couple of leagues where I have no fab flexibility or not a lot of it. I got him as a secondary free pickup. So I encourage people just to make sure he should be rostered somewhere. And hopefully to you, I think there's an upside for him.
I'd agree with that. I think that's smart. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. I know Scott has told me ahead of time, Yahoo has 5 fantasy football podcasts a week right now. And it's not always Scott every time, but Scott's a big part of that. Plus, he does the premium breakfast table with Michael Salfino every year. That's a pretty heavy workload there for you.
Yeah, the Media Tour 2020. 3 podcasts today with the Dalton Gambling Pod we did. This show, which was very enjoyable, and I always like talking to you. And I'll be breaking down football with Mike later today. So if you want to catch up to me, and of course you can listen to me on RotoWire. I'm a Thursday guest. I think it's at 12:30 Eastern time, 12:35, something like that. So I'll be on Thursday. Dalton is also a Thursday guest. They get great guests. We talked about Rufus earlier, who I think is there on the Wednesday show. Stefania Bell is your injury guest on Wednesday. She obviously Hall of Famer. She knows her stuff. And a former RotoWire alum also, I might add. So yes, much props to Stefania. So, hey, we got a lot to talk about, and we'll talk again tomorrow, and you'll check out the Yahoo stuff. You can play DFS at Yahoo. You can still draft a league if you didn't get it right the first time. Do it again. Fantasy Football Live on Sunday, which is a flagship show for us, and a lot of good stuff happened at Yahoo and with the breakfast table. I hope you check some of it out.
Good advice. And you can even jump in and start up a new survivor pool if you were on the Colts in week 1, too. You could do that, too.
Yeah, if you followed Chris Liss, on the Titanic, you hit that iceberg. Then,
nice.
Oh, man. I'd like to see some upsets, though. To me, week 2 was boring with all the favorites generally win. I mean, the Eagles were a tiny underdog, and then you had I don't think anybody was dumb enough to take the Saints on the road, but I like to see a little bit more survivor juice. I hope we see some upsets this week.
I dodged a big one with the Cowboys last week. Now I don't have to use them.
You took Dallas. Wow. And I know, and obviously Tennessee was the white knuckler too.
Yeah. So
the game could have gone either way. I had the Buccaneers, which looked pretty. I was going to go with the Niners. I hate to take road teams. And then I backed off that. I said, this makes me nervous. And of course they crushed the Jets from A to Z, but I decided that I do like Tampa Bay's defense, and I thought they would handle that game, and pretty much they did, although I feel like the Buccaneers shouldn't have covered. I hate to say this. I was so anti-Fournette. I think with that fumble with Brady and Jones having the miscommunication and some of the other mistakes that Jones has made, I'm afraid that Fournette might shove Jones out of the way. Not that I've ever been a big Ronald Jones guy, but I was so negative to Fournette. I almost feel like if he's great, I'm going to regret it, because I was like telling people like the way to prepare for your draft was just to cross him off your sheet.
How high do you have Fournette in your rankings this week?
Low 20s, maybe 22, 21, something like
24,
that.
22.
I do like Denver a lot in that game with the points, though. That's one of my favorite bets of the week.
I think I also picked Denver. We may have not too many differences this week. All right, we could keep talking forever. You'd like that, maybe. Maybe you wouldn't. I don't know, but we're going to have to conclude it, unfortunately, anyhow. Scott, as always, always a pleasure. Super fun talking with you today.
It was really fun. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
You bet. Scott Pianowski, follow him on Twitter, @Scott_Pianowski. Check him out on Yahoo. Coming up tomorrow, we've got John McKechnie, Mario Puig, as always, on the Thursday Fantasy Football Podcast here on RotoWire. Thanks for listening.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk. But it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.